I'm Sean from Voices of Defiance, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike, welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Wing.
I'm the movie dude Eric from Art House Legends Podcast.
And this week we have a really special edition. Things did not align for the usual Legends crew, so me and Legends, Art House Legends, are uniting our forces to talk about one awesome movie of February. Let's face it, usually February is a dumping ground, and any studio that thinks they can dump Kingsman on us is crazy.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm coming here to take over. You know, I'm going to bring out my inner Sam Jackson and just take over this motherfucker.
So you're going to talk like that for half an hour?
Nah, I'll let Sam Jackson do that. He does it better than I could. Seriously, that's impressive.
I saw Sam Jackson and I was like, okay, you're the Steve Jobs kind of guy. You kind of hold to do that. And then he started doing this accent and I was like, oh, I'm good with this.
Well, I love the fact that this is kind of his homage to Russell Simmons, who has kind of a speech impediment and kind of dresses in these kind of, you know, funky fresh clothes. And he just pulls it off. I mean, that takes confidence. That takes Samuel L. Jackson confidence to pull that kind of outfit off. You know, anyone else would just make a mess of it and we'd be making Vanilla Ice jokes for the rest of the night. You can't do that with Sam Jackson.
There's a one thing I need to say, that there was a big problem in the script at that point. You know when they bring McDonald's?
Mm-hmm.
His choice was, should have been a Royal with cheese. Because they are in Europe. And when he just take a cheeseburger,
but were they
I was
in
like,
France, though? That's the question. Are they in France?
No, they're in UK, but still, it's Europe. At this point, it should have been a Royal with cheese. Come on. That was my... You know, I saw the McDonald's thing, and I was like, oh, they will... No, they didn't. Well, of everything they did, of all the reference they went to, they did not go there.
To me, it would have been awesome if it were actually Colin Firth who asked for the Royale with cheese. That would have been even better. Just that kind of, like, uber meta moment. But...
Yeah.
Oh, but God, I love this movie.
Still, when we were watched Winter Soldier, the tombstone was Ezekiel, so...
That's true. But... Oh, man. Okay, Sam Jackson, from here on, he could practically do anything. In a way, if he decided that he wanted to do like the Pee Wee Herman story and play as Paul Rubens, I think he could actually do it. I think if you can pull off the 90s hip-hop clothes with the speech impediment, playing against gentlemen spies and come out on top, you've earned... You know, practically the world. The world is yours at this point. I don't care who wins the movie. Just saying.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that my favorite part of this movie is the conversation between him and Colin Firth, where Colin Firth wish he was a Bond villain, and Samuel Jackson wish he was Bond. I was like, yeah, that's nice. That's really, really nice.
That was my dream job, gentleman spy. I love that entire conversation. I love the fact that this is a world that has a James Bond in it. You know, that these guys can relate to it. I love the fact that this is a movie, because especially like with Bond fans, you know, they want to skip over the Roger Moore type stuff. You know, the more sillier, kind of outlandish kind of Bonds, and kind of stick with the stuff like Daniel Craig or to some extent the Sean Connery stuff. And this is one that, again, we're talking about like the freaking lasers on the freaking sharks kind of thing here. I wouldn't have been surprised if we actually had laser sharks and stuff. But then, you know, Matthew Vaughn, oh my God, I mean, I am so glad that he decided to step down from Days of Future Past to make this movie, because if he hadn't made this movie, we would be groaning right now, right? This would have been a complete disaster.
Well, now that I know that he dropped from Days of Future Past to do this, I understand. Because when he dropped from Days of Future Past, it was like, I have that other project that nobody ever did before, and it's the first shot at this, and I really, really, really want to do it. And knowing how much of a Bond fan he is, watching, again, First Class was a Bond movie. Let's be honest. First Class was a Bond movie in disguise. And this is another... This is one of the best Bond pastiche. Is that a pastiche or is it a parody?
No, it's more pastiche. It respects the material. It isn't trying to make fun of it. Even at its most insane, it's not... It isn't coming out and making fun of the tropes. It's respecting the tropes and enjoying the outlandishness of it. So that's more pastiche, in my opinion.
Okay. Okay. The only big thing I would say is that this has the same problem as every superhero movie that introduces a character has, which is the villain is underdeveloped. But with the kind of movie we got, I didn't mind that much.
I don't know. I'm actually going to speak in defense of this villain, especially considering how we're introduced to the villains. I love Gazelle.
Oh, Gazelle is awesome.
His henchman, which I would put it right up there with Oddjob and Jaws as one of the great henchmen of movies ever. And especially, you know, with an opening in Argentina, going after Mark Hamill of all people, which...
Have you read the comic?
I have read that part. I did.
Okay.
But to me, I thought it was fun. I thought it was better that he actually played a character, not himself, in this. I love the fact that it's Jack. Jack Noseworthy, or he's the he's that dashing guy from the Pirates of the Caribbean, the one that goes after Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yes. Oh my God! I totally missed that. Nice ball, sir. I totally missed that. Wow. Yes, you're right.
And he made it look so good. That was just the way that he dispatched all those henchmen was just pretty awesome. And then again, he just didn't realize that there was one more right behind him, and that split. I've had a lot of people talk about how the special effects just aren't up to snuff. They don't get it. It's intended to be ridiculous.
It's a cartoon.
Yes.
It's all like Looney Tune type stuff. And I mean, when we get to the firework exploding heads at the end, I'm like, okay, they really don't care at this point. They just want me to laugh, and I'm laughing.
Absolutely. And the music that they use for that, again, it's giving you clear indication that you're supposed to laugh. To me, what made that scene was, you know, in Argentina, is that when Giselle kills Lancelot, that she pulls out all of these white linen to cover up the bodies, so that her boss could come in and talk to Mark Hamill. The thing that another part of that I loved about that is the fact that it's white linen, and yet you don't see blood seeping through the sheets.
There's no blood in this movie. As violent as this thing is, they keep it. I think it's rated R.
It is rated R.
Okay, but this kind of keep it soft R because you're already getting an R rating. They could have went like overboard with the blood, but the fact that they don't keeps it funny.
Part of me wonders that one of the reasons why it was moved from its October release to a February release was that Fox was trying their hardest to get to get Matthew Vaughn to push this to a PG-13, because you cut out a couple of the curse words and soften a little bit of the violence here and there. This could have been a PG-13 movie, and you could have played it for the teenagers. And I'm really glad that they didn't, because I think that that was a really good call. But at the same time, I could also see Fox just begging, like, please, please, we want to make more money. This is going to make a lot of money. We want more money. Let us PG-13 this thing. And
yeah, because that's a sneak in movie. If I was like 15, I would find a way to sneak into this flick. And
yes.
I'm happy they did not go there, because I think the first scene that they would have to cut would have been the church scene, which made the movie for me.
Yeah. I will say there's one interesting thing, and I think this was actually intended, but I find myself laughing at it every time I see this, and I've seen the movie 3 times already. An organization that takes its code names from Arthurian legend sit around a rectangular table.
Okay.
I'm sorry, shouldn't it have been round?
Yes, but I think that's the point.
I know.
I think that the point is to show that they've evolved, they moved forward in this, so that's why they didn't do the round table. But the only cheesy thing for me was the fact that they changed the name for the Knights of the Round Table. I was not a big fan of that. It brings back the idea of the old concept of Bond being Bond all the time, but being different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've never been a fan of. So that's I get where they were going with that, but I would have been okay with the character keeping their names, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually like the element of everyone having code names of Arthurian legend, especially considering that these, again, we're talking about the quintessential legends of Law and Order being used by a clandestine organization trying to get around Law and Order in order to do good. A part of me feels that that was kind of one of the points that they were trying to make, this kind of that in a way they're giving you heroes and an agency that you can get behind, but at the same time I feel like they're also questioning, should you get behind these guys?
Yes, but they do, because at the reveal at the end, when you the reveal, and by the way, if anybody listened to this cast before, spoiler alert, sorry, but that's what we do here. When you get to Michael Caine or Arthur being the bad guy, which I've read the comic and it was so different that I didn't thought they would go there, because he's Michael Caine.
Well, any organization that the last test is that you have to shoot a dog, to me, is an organization that you need to be questioning. Maybe I'm a sentimental individual, such as another one of your hosts about four-legged friends. But it's like when that happened, I found myself asking, okay, are they asking him to shoot the dog because they want to test his loyalty? Or are they are they asking him to for his judgment? You know, that he's willing to have more, that they're wanting someone that has a moral standing. And then, of course, when was it Roxy shoots instead of him?
Yes,
is like part of me. I knew that it was a ruse. Either way, I knew it was a ruse. The dog, especially after that parachute thing. I was pretty sure that there was no way that was going to hurt the dog. But, again, it was all about the questions. Like, what is it that they're looking for? And
You know what? The beauty of this scene is that, and I think the beauty of that test, is what are they looking for? Are they looking for the guy that's not going to shoot the dog? Or are they looking for the guy that shoot the dog? And Sean, I know, Sean, you should never shoot the dog, and I'm sorry if they got
and
you
he
there.
Didn't.
I hope you didn't walk out of the theater before you got the reveal. We know, Sean.
I have to admit, though, the idea of stuffing and placing your four-legged companion over your toilet after a long and what looks like a really rugged lifestyle for this dog. that got a little carry for me, but
I was like, why did you put this? Is kind of creepy, like you're taking a shit and you see your dead dog all the time. I had a kind of weird that was the weirdest thing to me, and there's a lot of weird shit in this movie.
Well, maybe I should state that for the record that that isn't the most insane thing I've seen over a toilet before. I have, in fact, seen long-barreled rifles crisscrossed on top, you know, just above a toilet.
You live in Texas, sir.
Yes. But even here, that's still a little fucked up. I'm sorry. You still don't see that every day. To me, I'm just wondering if that was if that's there for decoration or if that's there for self defense. Like you're like here you are on the crapper, just like, man, I really need a long barreled shotgun right here,
dude. If you're on the toilet and you get attacked, a long barrel shotgun is the best thing you can have.
But again, the dog though, that was.
But to bring back that point, I think at that point they give you enough hints that these are all tests, because you get the parachute thing, then you get the train thing, which the train thing, the fact that they're like, you only watch your friend, and they're like, oh hell yeah.
But isn't that a redundant test, or at least for Eggsy, because he already had that loyalty test before. To me, it's like, for him, that would have been an obvious thing.
Yeah, but his life was not in danger the first time. Now he was like, okay, this is it. I'm dying now.
Yeah, I can see that. It's just, it would have been nice if it were a little bit more. I love the fact that before that all the finalists had to hit on this one girl, including Roxy. And that Roxy just, okay, can we just say it? She earned the Lancelot slot. Sorry, she was awesome.
She was the best.
Yeah, she was even better than Eggsy. Although that said, the fact that she was the official Kingsman and they have her doing the rocket launcher, you know, the space rocket. I don't know. I mean, wouldn't they be giving her the...
You've seen the movie how many times? Three times?
Three times so far.
First time I had a problem with it. The second time when I understand that he was taking the place of a man... They could not send her, because I don't remember the name of the character he's taking the place of, but they're waiting for a man, not a woman.
Well, it's Galahad that he's replacing. Or no, is he's replacing Arthur.
Yeah, no, not in the Kingsman. In Valentine's plan. Valentine's is waiting for a man to get out of that plane, not a woman.
But it wouldn't look like they were checking the sex, though. They were just checking the...
Yeah, but the name of the character is clearly a man. It's like Robert something or Sir Robert something. I'm really bad with names, so I'm sorry for all listeners. But that's when at my second viewing, I was like, oh, that's why they're sending her there. And the fact that they insert the point that she's afraid of heights and she's doing the Red Bull thing of going almost in space kind of work for the character.
Yeah. Part of me was a little miffed on the second and third viewings because they had set up that she had a height problem before here. So to me, it's like one of those tropes. Like, so not only do you to do your job, you're going to have to face your fears yet again
Good screenwriting, though.
I don't know. It's just that they put it a little bit too heavily on the dot. It's not a bad thing. It's not like I'm like shaking my head at it, but it's just like one of those things. Is like, you know, I mean. It would have been nice to, you know, to have it be a bit different. Like, you know, maybe, you know, like there was like someone trying to shoot it down, you know, maybe like an F-16 or something. That'd be the threat, not just the, you know.
Yeah, but they can't at that point because they don't know who to trust. That's why they're not calling the other Kingsmen and they're only going like the three of them.
Yeah, I know. Can we talk about Merlin? Because I love Merlin. Merlin is the best.
Merlin is great. Is Merlin the new Arthur at the end? Because they mentioned that somebody new is in charge.
I'm assuming so. Or at least he's going to be by proxy, and they'll find another Arthur. Maybe it could be another Kingsman that could take over. I mean, they didn't lose all the Kingsmen, so you know, I don't know how the hierarchy works for the Kingsmen. And from what I understand, Matthew Vaughn has made this his franchise. And Fox is very happy, so they're going to make a sequel.
Yeah, but until he drops of it, because that's what Matthew Vaughn does. Matthew Vaughn, right now, probably my favorite director in Hollywood. But probably the most unreliable director in Hollywood. Well, this man has dropped of how many movies in the last 10 years?
Well, here's the thing. I've watched interviews with him regarding Kingsman, and he calls this his franchise. He didn't call Kick-Ass his franchise, and I have a strange feeling that X-Men, that part of the story is that, yeah, he decided he wanted to do Kingsman, but I also get the feeling that part of him kind of got wrestled out because Bryan Singer wanted back in.
He dropped off X-Men 3 to do Layer Cake. He dropped from Days of Future Past to do this, and the way I've heard about it, and I've heard it firsthand from Zinger. He did not really want to do Days of Future Past at that point. He wanted to produce it. Did not want it to be the director, but he decided to direct it because he had a vision as a producer, and he wanted to make sure that this vision came to the screen.
Yeah.
So, and now he's just in love with the material, so that's why he wants to do it again. And the man loves Montreal for personal reasons that I'm not going to get into here, but let's say we have a great village here. So
awesome.
So he's happy to come back this time, but Zinger was not like longing to go back. So Vaughn is an unreliable director in the fact that he kind of drops of a project if something else smells better to him. I am so happy that he dropped from X-Men to do this, because X-Men Days of Future Past is one of my top 5 movies of the last year. And I know last year had lots of great movies. But yeah, Days of Future Past rocked. And Kingsman is probably one of the best movies I've seen in the last 12 months.
Kingsman is definitely, for me, one of the best examples of what a spy movie should be. You know, it's not the kind of the intricate John le Carré spy, but, you know, the outlandish mega spy, I guess is the way I'll put it, because it has you have yourself a really awesome protagonist, you have a threat that genuinely is exciting and terrifying and just going all over the place. It, you know, this goes from South America to Europe to Kentucky, which I know we'll be talking about in just a second. And then it turns out to be a worldwide threat. You know, it's not just localized to one location. And, of course, we have the ultimate and awesome Bond bad guy hideouts. I love it. I love this mountain. I love how they establish this lair, how they establish Valentine's plans and his plot, how he uses his computer to set things up and to synchronize it. And it's a well thought out plan. And the one thing I found myself thinking about even after the first screening is Valentine, while he is technically the villain, in a way his heart is kind of in the right place a little bit. You get the sense that he thinks that he's doing something good.
But any great villain doesn't see himself as the villain. And yeah, and as I cannot get in, I cannot back his plan kind of makes sense. His plan is basically, we are too many human beings, so let's kill a bunch of them, like a couple of billions, mm-hmm, and we'll be able to survive longer. The problem with his plan is that it's a hierarchy plan where the rich stays alive and the poor kills themselves.
Yeah, but then the poor have to do things for themselves for a change, and they won't have anyone doing their bidding unless they're intending to procreate all of those henchmen that they have trying to gun down Kingsman agents and use them as labor. I mean, rich people don't do a whole lot of farming, to my knowledge.
Good point. But the movie does not delve into that, and any movie would not delve into that at that point. But the point is still to show that the...
I answered that question on the third viewing.
Okay, go for it.
Africa. There's not a whole lot of cell signals in Africa. So technically speaking, you would have the slave trade all over again.
Oh, true. True. Oh, that's wow. Okay, that's a really unethical but legal question. Legal way to see things.
Well, I asked myself that. It's like if you're going to kill off 95% of the planet, and these are rich people, and rich people don't like doing their own shit. Well, who are they going to get to do it? It was, you know, that's just where I came from. But man, I mean, that said, Kentucky.
Okay, was that the Westboro Church?
Well, Westboro is, I believe, in Kansas, but it's a Westboro-type church.
Well, because in the same breath, they are bringing down homosexuals, abortion clinics, black people, and I'm like, when the Kingsman turns and Colin Firth's like, I need to go back to my black gay boyfriend that works in an abortion clinic. I just started to laugh.
My entire audience cheered when he said that.
It's best line ever because you ate them all at that point. And when he says,
it's Colin Firth saying it. You know, this is Mr. Frickin' Darcy. Yes. You know, this is like, you know, in a way. Whatever Colin Firth says will automatically get women to orgasm. All he has to do is just sigh, and women will want to have his children. And he's talking about ex-gay, you know, his gay lover, abortion clinic, Obama loving, you know, such and such. It's like, yeah, it's like
so liberal all of a sudden. Like every liberal point in one line, and I was like, you're a man that knows how to talk to people.
It's
just perfect.
But and one word, Free Bird.
Yeah. And you know how this song end up in this movie, which
hey, there's not a guitar solo any longer than Free Bird.
I heard that on YouTube and I was like, fair enough, but that works pretty well.
I'm sorry, I love Freebird. You know, Freebird's been used in movies, you know, over and over and over again, in both memorable movies and bad movies alike. And I have to say, this is easily one of the best sequences ever using Freebird to it. And, oh, wow. I have to give it to the stunt crew, because this is a lot of practical stunt work. You can tell they use some visual effects, but you could tell there's a lot of actual hitting, kicking, punching. A good deal of it with Colin Firth. Maybe not all of it. I'm pretty sure that at some point they had to use some digital stuff, some digital doubles. But yeah, this is a very physical, brutal, dark. I mean, this, you know, where we didn't see blood before, there is blood all over this church. I mean, I think it would have been pretty awesome if when he leaves the church and he's the last one standing, is that when he opens the door, like puddle, you know, flood just comes out as he's walking out, because he easily killed that many.
Yeah.
Matthew
Vaughn has a way to shoot action where it's like a ballet. Every action scene looks like a dance routine. It's beautiful. As a fan of long tracking shot and nice action sequence, this is one of my favorite movie ever.
Have you seen the Braid series yet?
Yes.
Okay, so again, you know, long shots, very skilled stunt team. Kingsman definitely learned not just from Gareth Evans and his crew, but I love how he uses the gun in the various ways. You know, he's not just using it to shoot people. He's, you know, using it as a hammer. He's, you know, sending, you know, knives right up people's cleft palates, which is really gross, but I mean, he uses everything in that church to kill, and it's, your stomach is just knotted up because you know that he can't stop, because we, at this point, you know, unless you're like 10, you understand what the situation is. But the fact that your hero, the guy that you've been rooting for the entire movie, is practically doing a genocide. I mean, he's cleansing that church.
Yeah, but they're killing him right after. So it's even if he's doing something really bad and the audience does not go with it, he's kind of getting redeemed by the fact that he dies right after it.
I know, and that was what I was curious about. You know, when I was watching the scene, it's like, okay, because it's going to be very hard to get back behind him being the hero after this. What are they going to do with him? And then, of course, Sam Jackson just puts a bullet in his head. And again, are we talking about one of the things that's a Bond trope is that they shoot the chest that we know is the bulletproof vest? But no, he puts it right in his almost his eye socket and then pukes all over him as he does so.
Yeah, but for some reason, Matthew Vaughn said that he might not be dead because we haven't seen a funeral and we haven't seen the bullet actually go in his head. I was like, okay, we'll see what you do with the sequel, but he should just be dead.
I mean, there might be ways that you can bring him back, but at the same time, though, you know, when we talk about sequels, I would be more interested in getting to know the infrastructure of the Kingsmen, know what it is to be inside this organization, because we don't really get to know much about the organization.
It's not an organization. It's a fringe, almost a terrorist organization that does good.
But again, they still meet up. They still have little meetings and holograms. George Lucas is going to sue somebody for something. But
nice pull, sir. Nice pull.
Just saying. The thing is that they still have a head. They still have an infrastructure. Marlin activates whatever agents they need activating. But there's still an organization here. And I'm pretty sure that after losing three agents during this particular investigation, they are probably going to be kind of updating the procedures. I mean, there's going to be three slots. Well, two. I guess there's only one slot to fill.
Well, actually, yes. Okay. Let's assume Merlin takes the place of Arthur. They just need a new Q.
Yeah. But, okay.
Because Merlin is Q. Let's be honest. Merlin is Q.
But he's better than Q because he has a better gun. Let's be honest. Him wielding that gun of his is awesome. Like, hey, let me have the gun. No, that's my gun. It's my gun. You get your own gun. And he gets an umbrella.
Yeah, okay. But the fact that he chooses the umbrella and he looks at him like, good choice.
Good choice.
That made me laugh so hard at that point. Not as much as if you save the world, you can get me in the ass, but...
Hey, I love that line. Because, okay, you know what? Saving the world deserves anal.
Yes, but, you know, they say that and I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, that's a cute line. Then he gets the bottle of champagne at the end, run in the room, and you're like, oh, they're not going to go there. It's just going to have sex. And they show you the butt shot before the credit, uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, they went there.
Well, I love the fact that the question is Marlon going to watch? Because he sees through the glasses, right? And so, you know, he closes the monitors. And, of course, we have our little our post-credit sequence, right, where Eggy...
We have the redo of the same scene at the start, yes.
Okay. Can we talk about that pub scene just for a second? I know that we're kind of jumping around here, but that pub scene...
Hey, well, you're on Legend. You're not on Art House Legends. That's what we do.
Yeah. But, oh, man, the pub scene. I love how this introduces Colin Firth, the actor, as a badass. We didn't see it coming with him. We've seen him in Shakespeare in Love. We've seen him in Pride and Prejudice. We've seen him... as a dramatic actor, in just one sequence, using an umbrella to send a empty glass straight into the guy, into a forehead of this thug, we know that this guy is serious business. Just in the fact that he stays a gentleman throughout the fight, he is a gentleman throughout the entire fight. He doesn't do low blows. He doesn't go for cheap shots. He, you know, even when he uses his weapons, it's in self-defense, right? I mean, you know, he doesn't use the stunner to go on the offensive. It's only when someone's going to come at him, you know, with a gun that he uses the umbrella, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, he gives them a fair fight throughout and beats them senselessly, which I have to admit was just a lot of fun. But and because we know what Eggsy can do, especially with that parkour that he's doing in the lair.
Great way to show you that he's as good as Daniel Craig. The Bond reference of doing the parkour was perfect.
Well, I love that they set that up so well that, you know, he could have been an Olympic gymnast, but he had to. Actually, the way that they introduced Eggsy, because I was worried with the trailers and stuff that he was just going to be one of these kind of blowhard assholes that we're not going to really care about. And that, you know, we weren't not going to care what happens with this character. And to find, you know, when we first see him as a little child after his dad is dead, and then we see that life just went shitty after that, that because of, you know, or I'm going to assume that if his dad were alive, that things would have been better. But, you know, his mom gets hooked up with at least some sort of local hooligan, you know, got pregnant and hates her life. Eggsy is having to turn to crime in order to keep his mom afloat and his half sibling. You know, because let's be honest, that bum isn't gonna give them much, is he?
Nope.
I'm sorry. He's spending everything at the pub, but you know I love how when Galahad pushes him on it, he's just straight up. It's like, look, I do what I have to do. You know, I'm not going to make, I'm not going to apologize for it because, you know, things got tough. And, you know, he stayed straight. You know, he doesn't rat on his friends. He doesn't, you know, he isn't out to screw anybody over. He just wants to even the playing field. I mean, hell, even when he steals that guy's car, you know, I mean, he's a skilled driver.
That scene where he's driving backwards in the car, one of my favorite chase scene in a while.
It is. I'm sorry, the Raid 2 had a better chase sequence, but again, semantics. But Kingsman, I love the fact that he's doing it all backwards. I love the fact that, you know, again, we're seeing that part of his character that when, was it a cat or some sort of small creature jumped out, that he preferred to wreck the car than to hit the animal.
He's a good guy. That shows you that he has a heart.
Yeah. And then when it looked like the cops were going to bust him, he lets his friends out so that they won't get caught and, you know, he's going to take the rap for them. Or, you know, I don't know if he intended to use the necklace at that point or not, but, you know, but you got the sense that he wasn't going to let his friends go down for him. And again, you see the nobility in him and, you know, the things that are going to make him an interesting character to follow. And to see him use quick thinking logic, with the exception of the whole hitting the two-way mirror thing, even if he knew it was a two-way mirror, how did he know exactly where to hit it to break it like that? Especially with water resistance as you're trying to punch it.
Yeah, well, I would argue that I would know that you need to hit it dead center to be able to break it. I knew that.
Okay.
That was my first play. I was like, break the two-way glass. Break. And when he goes for it, I was like, yeah, good man. Good man, you're saving all your friends. So I was surprised when one of them did not make it.
That shocked me. I was... But well, again...
You learned that later that was actually a plant, but my point was like, okay, he's saving everybody instead of saving his ass.
When we find out that it was a plant, again, it's the parachute. We should be asking ourselves, okay, you know, they're trying to make us believe that they're willing to kill their recruits in order to stress the situation, right? That if you're not careful, if you're not putting your 100%, you could die during this Hogwarts experience. and it's Hogwarts. Okay, you call it whatever you want. It's Hogwarts. Okay, for super spies.
Okay, I have a problem because you're not the first one I've heard talking about this movie and making the reference to Hogwarts, but not every English school board is Harry Potter now. It's not because they made Harry Potter an English school board that all of them are a reference to Harry Potter. I don't see the reference to Harry Potter.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a few questions, yes or no. Does he live on the premises?
Yes.
Does he stay year long?
Yes.
Does he use gadgetry that is not of, or use abilities and substances that are not available to the common person?
Yes. Have you read the Young Bond series?
I saw James Bond Jr. when I was a kid.
That does not count. That does not count. But if you read the Young Bond series, it's pretty much the same kind of idea. So for me, it was just more Young Bond. It was not necessarily the Harry Potter Hogwarts thing.
Well, I'm joking to an extent on the whole Hogwarts thing. But again, there is an emphasis on private prep schools. And as the movie clearly shows, this is a movie that's dealing with class warfare. The haves against the have-nots. The fact that the Kingsmen have generationally gone with nobility and have excluded themselves from looking at the non-noble elements of the United Kingdom. That they are limiting themselves to just a handful of bright students. And I love how Galahad puts it. Like, there is a reason why the Brits have soft chins. You know, that the Parliament has soft chins. It's, you know, inbreeding. So, again, it's just like, it was interesting to see that, and to see that Eggsy, he does kind of represent the street, but I also like the fact that this isn't a movie that the street teaches the lords and ladies how to do things, and the lords and ladies sure as hell don't give him any pointers. That it really comes down to who's going to get the job, and while Roxy does get it, at the same time, it's because she isn't just an like any of the others, you know, in a way she's also kind of a freak of her class too, because, you know, she is truly skilled. She isn't about appearances. She's not about looking good doing the job, although the girl can definitely wear a suit.
Oh,
gotta give her that.
Yeah, she can.
I would love to see that at Halloween, some Kingsman suits on some ladies.
Just saying, but next year, my Halloween costume is definitely a Kingsman costume. Because,
oh, hell yeah.
Because the nature of my work, I do own multiple suits. All I need to have is the glasses now, and that's pretty easy to come by. So mine...
You brought them horn rims.
Yeah, total disclosure, I'm getting an ornament glasses, pair of glasses for the next cosplay thing, which probably is going to be Comic-Con, not even Halloween.
If you keep up with the ages, I'm going to make you say Iron Eagle. I'm just telling you right now.
I don't want to watch Iron Eagle again. Okay, no. I'll watch Birdman. Yes, not Iron Eagle. Still birds. Still birds. It counts.
Oh, man. So uncivilized, man. Uncivilized. But, there's just so much I love about this. I love the production design, the look of the costume specifically.
Suits. I'm sorry. Again, as a man who owns multiple suits, I would love to have the money to buy one of these suits. The fact that they're bulletproof on top of it. God, these are the perfect suit. I need to have, what is it, room number two?
Yes.
When they get into that, what is it? It's a James Bond Q room at this point. Uh-huh. It's perfect. And when he tries to get the bomb lighter, the grenade lighter, Like, yeah, that's my boy.
Bring it back.
That was perfect because it shows that he's better than Arthur when you get at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think, like, he's good, but he's not that good. No, no. He's that good. It's just that Galahad was way better.
Well, to me, okay, so, you know, we kind of talked about how, you know, Arthur had been swayed by Valentine, right? But have you noticed that Valentine had persuaded a bulk of the world's leaders and highly influential people to join him in his quest simply just by talking to them?
I did not get it until I saw their head explode at the end.
Yeah. I mean, again,
when you see the American, like, heads of state explode, and pun intended.
Yes.
That was perfect. That was, I laughed my ass off so much.
I was worried because I saw the first time I saw Kingsman was before its initial release. I was worried that certain individuals of a particular news channel named after a rodent of sorts would use a particular scene lavishly about a particular American president who we see the back of his head before it turns into a purple haze. But I was really kind of nervous about that.
You're nervous because you're in Texas. I'm not nervous because I'm in Canada and I'm like,
yeah.
I'm in Commonwealth. These guys work for me.
I'm waiting for someone to make that a gif, and thankfully it hasn't happened just yet, but it's only a matter of time. These people are crazy.
But again, I love that end scenes when all the heads explode. Yes. I know we talked about it before, but it's just so cartoony and fun, and as a taxpayer kind of, I don't know, it's good. It's just good. It's a release.
I wonder if anyone had told the Queen and the royal family what happens to them at the end of this movie. Somehow I have a feeling that Matthew Vaughn's knighthood is going to be delayed.
Yeah, no shit. The only princess in there is taking it in the ass, so it's not getting a knighthood anytime soon.
Well, she was Swedish, right? I mean, the princess who agreed to...
Yes, that made it even sweeter.
Oh, man. I have to... to me... The fact that it goes to anal to me really kind of brings it back to the whole Bond thing, because Bond didn't get the ass, or that we know of, was never implied that he.
No, he didn't, and that was really, really funny, the fact that went there. But if you read the comic, he learns about the second G spot.
Yeah.
And when I saw the movie, having the knowledge of the comic, I'm like, yeah. Oh. That's where it is. Sorry. I know it's not politically correct, but this movie is not politically correct in any way, shape, or form.
Just like every other Matthew Vaughn movie, this thing has got its middle fingers up in the air, just laughing the entire way.
Agreed. If you've seen the rest of his work, this is the logical step after Kick-Ass and Layer Cake.
Yeah. This is a subversion of a genre. The only one that didn't subvert, and I'm pretty sure it's because he had major bulls right on top of him, was X-Men. Because one wrong step with that, he would have never seen a camera again in his life.
Yeah, X-Men is another beast, but this is starting a new franchise. And let's face it, again, the studio moving it from November to February shows that they did not trust the movie. And opening it the same weekend as 50 Shades of Shit gives you an idea how much they trusted it, which is not at all.
Part of me thinks that, because every time the trailers come out for it, and I mean, the excitement in my circles... And with my circle, some of them will get excited about this. Some of them won't, because, you know, action, sci-fi, Matthew Vaughn, Kick-Ass, you know, the snobs in my circle wouldn't normally find this stuff interesting, but for some reason, this really got more attention and more excitement than most other action movies that we were going to be seeing in the next couple of months. And
more excitement than Age of Ultron.
For me, yes,
but I'm talking about people we know, because you and me, I know, we're not the biggest Avengers fan on the planet, and that's okay. We are different beasts than most of people, but most of people right now can't wait for Age of Ultron.
And you know, and some of the people that I'm around, they also are not always a comic book people. And I tell them that this is Mark Millar, who is responsible for Kick-Ass, and in his pedigree, and it's that subversive nature. And I'm glad that Vaughn sees the best in Millar's work, but he also understands that Millar also can go too far. And so he finds a way to rein it in and make it accessible to larger audiences without losing its bite.
Yeah, he tones the comic down in a great way, where a movie like Wanted went too far. This has a good balance with Matthew Vaughn's style and Mark Millar writing.
Yes. And so this is, as long as Millar trusts Vaughn to, you know, to do his work, because as we find out with that other franchise thing bullshit, that writer didn't trust the production crew. Now that person's trying to take over and make it even worse. As long as Millar trusts Vaughn, I hope to see a Kingsman sequel. I hope that we get more of this. It would be interesting to see how the world would react after the majority of the world leaders have been blown up. That would be a very interesting world to come back to. And what would the Kingsman do in this world?
On the other end, one of the things that I would criticize the movie is that we follow the mother of Eggsy a little bit closer. So, and she has a couple of minutes to put her little girl in the bathroom before killing her. But let's face it, you and me would have been probably proud owner of one of these SIM cards, and I would have been at dinner with my family. We haven't seen all those dinner scenes, but some family went bad.
I know, and I think that that's what is great about what Vaughn does, is that he implies, he'll give you just enough to let you know that bad stuff's going to happen. You know, there is a death toll at the end of this day, and it might be in the millions.
Easily.
But considering that it could have been billions, leave it at that. But I will say, though, it would have been interesting, because Galahad had that wall of newspaper clippings of all the days that he saved the world, and none of them had anything to do with his job.
Yep.
It's like, I'm curious to wonder what would be Eggsy's...
Wait, isn't it first. Like something like Kim Kardashian head explodes, which made me laugh?
I don't know if I saw that. I don't know if I... Maybe I missed that, but I didn't see a newspaper article.
Maybe I've heard that on YouTube, but that's probably what would happen at that point. It would be some crazy stuff like... what's her name? I don't know. No, at this point, I'm just reaching for, like, Lady Gaga kills people.
Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, here you go. Iggy Azalea makes him kills her girlfriend or something like that. That would be the...
Yeah. Well, that was one thing I was kind of disappointed was that they made references to Iggy Azalea going missing. And I would have thought that she would have been in that dungeon with the rest of the world leaders that refused to work with Valentine.
They didn't play enough with that dungeon thing. I think they could have put more well-known actors in there, and that would have been funny. Like put Sean Penn in there, and I'm laughing as hell.
But I want his head to explode.
Yeah, but that would be funny for him to say no.
No, I want him to say yes. I have a personal vendetta against Sean Penn, as anyone would
like most people.
I mean, you know, but so yeah, I want his head to explode. But Vin Diesel, that would have been fun.
Oh, that would be perfect to have Triple X.
Yes.
Stop it. Stop in one of these things. Oh, yeah, that would have been really funny. But the fact that he's Triple X, I think he would never have accepted that role.
Well, considering that, you know, he takes roles just for the fun of it, but especially if you could have, like, his cellmate next door be Daniel Craig. Not Bond, just Daniel Craig, who, you know, has worked with Matthew Vaughn before.
That would have been funny as hell.
That would have been the ultimate in joke. That would have been...
Sony would never let him do that. The fact that Disney let Sam Jackson, Nick Fury, do that role is already impressive.
I don't think that... from what it looks like with me, when it comes to Sam Jackson, they couldn't tell him no if they wanted to.
Yeah, but that was a Marvel... published book, I think. That was not an Image. That was a Marvel published book, I'm pretty sure.
Perhaps, but...
not written book, but published book. So, the fact that they let him... one on the other end, how can you stop Samuel Jackson to do whatever the fuck he wants?
I know, I'm telling you. I would love to be in that room when they try to tell Sam Jackson he can't do this movie. Because I have a strange feeling that the ground would tremble.
Yeah.
And probably even open up in a hell mouth as it sucked in executives after executives.
Yeah, but Samuel Jackson is deep with Marvel now. Not with Marvel, but with Disney, because he has Marvel, he has Star Wars and all that stuff. So, I mean, the mouse is paying the bills.
But have they given him a contract regards to his Star Wars stuff? Or are they actually working?
My point is he was in Star Wars.
I mean, the thing is that it depends on what they're intended to use with him. At this point, you know, he could easily just step back and just collect the money off of Nick Fury stuff till, you know, the end of time. You know, the thing that he doesn't, because he doesn't get paid as nearly as much as the other bigger stars, you know, you want to have his charisma. Hell, you could put him in, you know, put him in a Black Panther or in a Doctor Strange movie, and just having him in there gives that movie more credence. Just even just a 2 minute space, just him coming in when you know.
Yeah, I see your point. I see your point, but this movie doesn't care because what is it? Even like the McDonald thing. They were not paid. McDonald did not endorse this movie. I think something like Carl's Jr. did.
Yeah, Carl's Jr. did. But the thing I thought was interesting was that everyone thought the joke was the fact that that Valentine offered McDonald's to a quote unquote aristocrat.
Yes.
And the thing that I think that people don't think about is that was actually a test. That Valentine was testing him by bringing out the McDonald's. That, you know, if he were true upper crust, he might have found that to be offensive and kind of made Valentine less suspicious, but the fact that he was willing to go with the McDonald's showed that he wasn't the complete, you know, caviar and champagne type.
Good point. He is a normal man. He is you and me.
Well, yeah.
I don't eat at McDonald's, but I get the point.
Yeah, but if you're offered free McDonald's with Samuel L. Jackson, which, needless to say, even if you were an aristocrat and Samuel L. Jackson offered McDonald's, you probably would eat it.
I would eat anything that Samuel Jackson would give me. Yes, I've said it. Anything. Yes.
But... apparently, you shouldn't drink anything he gives you because he'll lace it with a tracking device.
That was a nice, nice scene because after that, when they're like in the first room, there's somebody and it's him. That was a great reveal.
I will say one of my favorite Samuel L. Jackson scenes is him with the top hat. Just seeing him all decked out in tux and tails in a top hat. That was awesome.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. One last thing I want to touch there is the balls that Matthew Vaughn had to cast an unknown. Because I've looked on IMDb, and this guy that plays the Eggsy is this is basically his claim to fame. And damn, he did good.
Well, I mean, the thing is that it's a time-honored tradition. I mean, Patrick Fugit was an unknown when he did Almost Famous. Thomas. Oh crap! I forgot his first name.
Well, you just have to think about Jennifer Lawrence in X-Men's days of X-Men First Class. She was not Jennifer Lawrence yet.
Had an Academy Award nomination by that point. She was in Winter's Bone.
Yeah, but she was not an action or a blockbuster star at that point. And same thing for Daniel Craig in Layer Cake. He's good at casting. I don't know who his casting director is, but keep him or her.
No, I mean, definitely he has an eye for talent. He picks actors that, you know, that he sees more in them than perhaps they see in themselves. Because, you know, while Jennifer Lawrence wasn't an unknown, he saw that she was capable of being a physical force that we would believe as an actual warrior. And that's true. Something that not everybody could do. With Daniel Craig, he saw in him this kind of rough and tumble type, who they could be on top of the world in the underground. You know, before then, he was in Road to Perdition, where he played a whiny, the whiny son of Paul Newman. You know,
yes, that's
and
true.
You know, he was also in, and I'm not kidding here, he was in a couple of Disney movies at that point, like A Kid in King Arthur's Court kind of thing. You know, he was really young, but I mean, again, not the Daniel Craig that we would be thinking about. He does have an eye for casting, and he has an eye for seeing something unique in him. With Taron Egerton, I think that's his name. Because the thing is, we have to believe that he is of the streets. You know, we have to believe that he can, you know, that he has a swagger, that he has that self-defense mechanisms that would keep him alive when the hoods come after him. But at the same time, we also have to believe that he can make that My Fair Lady transition, which, by the way, one of the best lines in the movie. I love it.
Have you seen My Fair Lady? No. Have you seen...
No. It's have you seen Pretty Woman? Have you seen... it was Pretty Woman. Crap, it was another movie. And then it's like, oh, you mean My Fair Lady.
The other movie was the Julia Roberts...
Yeah, Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. Okay, sure. Yeah, but we're in an era where people that likes movie are making movies.
Mm-hmm.
If fans are making movies, and I love when they reference when they're talking about the dog named GB, they're like James Bond, nope. Jason Bourne, nope. Jack Bauer.
Jack Bauer.
I'm like, yep, that's you.
I love it. I love that pug too. That pug has got so much personality. And again, another thing about. Taron Egerton and the screenplay is that we understand this guy. I mean, when he pulls the gun on the dog at first, you know, because the dog won't move, he's not going to shoot him, but he's frustrated and he's trying to impress Galahad. And so, you know, you get the sense of the frustration and the desire to meet the challenge. And you know, and then of course, you know, what does he do? He packs the dog up in his shirt and runs with the dog. I mean, it's a brilliant concept, but we believe that he can make these quick decisions, that he's capable of assessing the situation, and it turns out that's important later on in the movie, that he has to be able to improvise when things aren't at nominally for him.
Yeah, but the fact that he doesn't recognize a bulldog from a pug is...
Oh, come on, that's brilliant.
I don't know. I was like the only dog I would not choose. And I'll be honest, after seeing the first trailer, I stayed away from him from it because I was like, okay, I'm interested in this movie, so I don't want to know too much. Lots of people told me that it came up in the trailer. When I saw the movie, I was like, oh, I would take this dog or that dog. And when he ends up with the pug, I'm like, why? And it's a mistake. And I'm like, okay, this just makes it way better.
I love that it's a mistake. But at the same time, again, one of the things about the test that they're doing is that they're not just testing how they deal with stimulus, but what they choose. You know, because all the dogs are different. You know, so a different, you know, they all have different personalities. So what does Eggsy pick? He picks the one that he has to defend. He's a defender. He is, to use another movie that came out recently, he's the sheepdog that protects the sheep.
Fair enough.
You know, I hate the fact that I'm using that because I hate that fucking movie, but sorry. But it definitely gives us his personality and what it is that he is trying to do. So, again, I'm not surprised that he would point the gun at Arthur instead of the dog when asked to shoot the dog. He protects the one that can't defend themselves.
Fair enough. Before we get to the rating, there's been some news coming out today, which I found pretty interesting because I know you and me are big Star Wars fans.
Yes.
And right now... Taron Egerton, that's his name? Taron Egerton, the main actor in Kingsman, might be eyed to play a young Han Solo in the Star Wars spinoff. What do you think about that?
I can see it. Right now, I think that... Oh, man. To me, I would have to see what the script is and how they're trying to give us Han Solo, because if they're trying to make him out to be, you know, someone that's just against the system, Taron Egerton will work. But if he's also kind of this roguish type of scumball in a way,
let's face it, we're talking about Han shot first here.
You know, it's I don't know the thing, and that's just kind of ironic. But I think he's too nice to play Han Solo. You know, the scoundrel. You know, I could see him, you know, going fuck the system, but I can't see him, you know, doing some of the bullshit that I know that Han Solo is capable of, especially in his youth. You know, I can't see him swindling the Millennium Falcon out of Lando's hands. You know.
Okay, fair enough. I see your point. I'm still hoping for the guy from Breaking Bad to be the young Han Solo, but
Aaron Paul?
Yes, I think he would be perfect.
I don't know who I'd want. In a way, I would almost say I would like to see an unknown who has just some real charisma and you know, someone that we just don't see coming. A choice. And again, if Taron Egerton can pull that off, then the fact that I don't see it actually makes me like it even more, because that means that he has a lot more range than I gave him credit for. And I love being wrong in those instances. I love being able to say, you know what? Guardians of the Galaxy was a lot better than I ever thought it was ever going to be.
Yeah. And this guy is pegged to be on Indiana Jones right now. So
yes. And the fact that Spielberg is showing interest in seeing that vision, gives me a lot more hope that this actually happens.
I think, and that's my final prediction there, but I think that Spielberg will do a final Indiana Jones with a new actor.
And because it's an odd number sequel, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, because 2 and 4 are not that great, and 1 and 3 are probably some of the best movie ever made.
Well, I don't think anything will ever hit Raiders of the Lost Ark, but again, that was like hitting perfection. Perfect. It's perfection. I saw it in IMAX. You know, I paid IMAX prices to see it in IMAX, and I'm not kidding. It's like I got more out of it on the 8th and 9th viewings than I had before. And every time I see it now, I see more in it that I just don't see in the sequels again. It's not about the sequels being bad or not. I still like all of them. I like Temple of Doom and Kingdom of Crystal Skull, although not nearly as much as Last Crusade. But
Wait. Have you just said that you like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Yes. Yes, okay. I did.
I think we're ready to rate this movie because you're going down a path where I can't follow. So, my friend from Art House Legends, are you going for Kingsman? Legendary legends of its time, cult legend, awesome, entertaining, memorable, forgettable, or abysmal? Where do you stand on Kingsman?
This thing has got a fan base. This thing is going to have a huge fan base. I see this being a movie that people are going to plug in with their friends, maybe even spout lines at it and have a lot of great alcohol watching this thing. I don't think this thing is going to have a huge mainstream appeal just because of the insanity of the things that's going on. But I think film fanboys and people who love great action and sci-fi are going to flock to this thing, so I'm saying cult legend.
I'm torn. I'll be honest, on this one, I'm torn. As a personal movie, as a huge James Bond fan, and if you guys did not figure this out, there's a reason why me and Movie Dude are doing this movie, because we did the Bond series as well on Legends Podcast years ago. I want to say legendary, but if I'm really honest, I have to agree, this is probably a cult legend. But as my personal choice, I have to go legendary. This hits all of the old James Bond trope. They actually call it out, which in a movie, for me, is a plus. I had lots of fun watching this movie on first and second viewing, and I'm kind of hoping to have a third viewing in theater before this is going out. Kingsman is a fun, hard R movie that I would never thought I would ever get. So for me, I'm going legendary, but with a side of cult legend in there. But damn, Matthew Vaughn just hit it so perfectly for me. If you're looking at his filmography as a director right now, he has like 5 movies under his belt. And these 5 movies are all really, really, really good for me. I'm one of the guys that liked Stardust for what it was as a...
Captain Shakespeare is the awesome boss.
Yes. And it was kind of a... How do you call that that movie? With Andre the Giant.
Whimsical? Oh, you mean Princess Bride?
Princess Bride. Yeah, for me, Stardust is like a 2000 version of Princess Bride. So,
I actually think it's better than Princess Bride specifically. It's not as memorable.
It's not as memorable, but it's as fun.
Yes.
It's the same vibe. So from Layer Cake to Stardust to Kick-Ass to X-Men's First Class to Kingsman, this is almost a perfect slate for me. So
I would even throw in his work with Guy Ritchie, Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, and Snatch. You know, he had a lot of say in those movies as well.
He just produced them, though.
He did just produce them, but you could definitely see his stamp in those movies as well. I mean, there's also Guy Ritchie stuff, but you know, Guy Ritchie's thing. But at the same time, I mean, look at the protagonist. Look at how the stories interweave with one another. That has the stamps of what we would see with Matthew Vaughn. It's kind of like what I'm seeing with Alex Garland. He has a movie coming out in April called Ex Machina, which is his first directorial film. He's written for Danny Boyle. He was responsible for Dread. The guy he wrote Dread the screenplay so for good. Dread. Yes. He's directing his first film with Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson about a Turing test being done by this kind of reclusive genius and one of his employees testing his latest creation. And the trailer for it is just awesome. It doesn't say a whole lot, but it doesn't have to. I am super excited to see this come out in April. Check out the trailer. It's awesome.
I'll check it out. I'll check it out. Now I'm excited. So, yes. So I'm going legendary, and I'm not even ashamed of it. So, yes. Any last words on Kingsman?
On Kingsman, let's see. Manners maketh man.
Okay, I'll iPhone it. I'm going to go with Pug. Because that threw me for a loop. This is your last chance to plug some stuff before I walk us out. So, Mr. Art House Legends, and I said it in the last on the last cast, and I want to say it again. I know I'm kind of executive producer on Art House Legends, but I'm the kind of executive producer that listens to the show and just like, yeah, keep going. So this is all you, Lobster and Kent, at this point, and I want to congratulate you on everything you've been doing at this point. What's coming up?
Oh, we are in the middle of going to our Phase 2 Art House Legends, and on Sunday, March 15th, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, me and my co-host, Lobster, are going to have ourselves a little debate. He's picked a well-known, well-beloved sci-fi movie. I picked a little-known, small indie film, and we're going to debate which one's the best. And everyone is invited to join in and vote for who they think wins. But Lobster's taking the 2000 sci-fi classic Galaxy Quest. I'm taking the little-known 70s film from Douglas Trumbull, Silent Running. And you can find these movies. If you want to join in, you can send us your questions for the debate. It's going to be a great time, and we hope that you'll join us for this. But that's the big thing. It's our Art House Showdown. And this upcoming week, we are discussing our last year's Best Picture winner, 12 Years a Slave, and a week from then, we might be talking about this year's Best Picture winner, and I think we might have a special guest. Hint, wink.
Fair enough. So, this has been episode 234 of Legends Podcast, Kingsman. I'm John D signing out. This was just amazing. Go watch Kingsman. If you haven't watched Kingsman, go watch Kingsman.
And this is the movie dude Eric saying that while you are free flying out there, one of you might not have a parachute.
Yeah, and if you save the world, you'd get the ass.
I was going to use that, but it's like, I don't know if I want to say that or not.
This is Legends. We don't care. If you're not happy, it's nightwing@gunnageek.com. Send me your 8-mail. I'll frame it up with the rest of the 8-mail on my wall.
And we're at arthouselegends@gmail.com if you want to send us your 8-mail.
Yes, we love 8-mail. Just send us mail or 8-mail. We don't care.
Yes.
We'll see you soon. Ciao.
Good night.
Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all of our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendspodcast.com, where you will find our complete archive. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incompetech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada or Gunna Geek. No infringement is intended.